Yes, welcome on into First Pitch, a production of the Inside Baseball Podcast Network. I'm Lindsey Crosby, MLB writer for Athlon Sports, joined by Christian Rau, managing editor of Inside the Cardinals and national MLB writer for Athlon Sports. This is Friday, July 26th. A lot happened in baseball yesterday. Let's get into it. Starting off, Christian, we have the second no-hitter of the year. San Diego Padres pitcher Dylan Cease goes nine full innings, no hits, obviously three walks, nine strikeouts against the Washington Nationals. Second time he flirted with a no-hitter. He lost one after eight, I believe it was eight and two-thirds, to now current teammate Luis Arraez. What was watching that no-hitter, right, which is only the second one the Padres have had, what was kind of, as that was developing late in the game, what was kind of your observations and takeaways of what Dylan Cease was doing?
Yeah, both of them happening away from Petco Park too, right? So that's, I guess, you know, it's exciting that you get the no-hitter, but you don't get it at home. And one of the most exciting fan bases in baseball right now. But how exciting was that, watching Cease do that? There was a moment when you were watching that game, it looked like he might get pulled out in before the eighth inning. They were making jokes about it on the broadcast saying, well, they're in DC. He lobbied his way back into the game and it looked like it worked. He had 114 pitches. He got himself into the ninth inning. And there was some times in that ninth inning where he looked like maybe in that eighth, the ninth inning where he might not make it. There was an out where Xander Bogaerts bobbled that play at two outs ago in the ninth inning, and it was very close. Now I guess that would have been called an error, so I guess maybe that would have been still a no-hitter, still shaky. We don't need that to happen. But when I was watching this game, Lindsey, I was so excited for the moments that were happening. My brother texts me on the side and he's like, yeah, Cease got pulled, I turned it off. I was like, you need to turn this game right back on, because he's still out there, it's still happening. And when I got that text, I was like, this is one of those kind of moments where you just got that feeling, it's like, this is actually going to happen. We're going to see it happen for Dylan Cease. And as you mentioned, 8 2/3 was the last time that he hit it. Luis Arraez is probably the other great story behind this. He's the one that broke up his last no hitter when he went against the Twins, and he's the one they got to hand him the ball at the very end and say, here you go. That. A really cool story for MLB. What a way to start off this show with a no-hitter.
Yeah, it's only the second one all year. Obviously, Ronel Blanco of the Astros had the other one. The big takeaway for me when I was watching, and full disclosure, I turned it on in the sixth inning because, I mean, I wasn't watching that game. And then I saw the no-hitter alert come up and I turned it on, is he has 94 pitches after seven. And Mike Schilt confirmed after the game that it's only because of the efficiency that Dylan Cease had in the eighth that he got to go back out there. He threw a nine-pitch eighth inning, not an immaculate inning, but a nine-pitch ninth inning. And I think that so often recently we've seen guys get pulled from no-hitters after six innings, seven innings because of pitch count. And this is a nice, not cautionary tale, but this is a nice picture of what can happen if you let a guy keep going. Now, obviously, Cease helped himself because, one, he has a history of going long. 113 pitches was his career high. So he only went one over that to do the no-hitter. But also being able to go out there and efficiently get outs, I think, was the big thing for him. And it's just incredibly exciting thing. So congratulations to Dylan Cease, the San Diego Padres. Like you said, maybe one day they'll get one at home. That would be nice to kind of see happen. And a fun note that you gave me, Joe Musgrove has the only other Padres no-hitter. It also came in his first year with the club. So I just find that interesting that their homegrown guys haven't necessarily done it, but when they acquire somebody, that guy can go out and throw a no-hitter that first season he's there. Kind of more action happening besides just no-hitters. A lot of the trades got started. We saw two trades yesterday, one of them late in the evening, another one kind of overnight while a lot of people were sleeping. But lefty reliever AJ Puck goes from the Miami Marlins to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then Randy Arozarena, the outfielder, goes from Tampa Bay Rays to the Seattle Mariners. Let's take AJ Puck first. Is this the Marlins reliever you were expecting to get traded at the deadline, or is it something where this is obviously just the first of many, you think?
I think that that's exactly what it is. I think it's the first of many. I will say that it was not the first reliever that I expected to go off the board. I think that was Tanner Scott, and I think we will eventually see that happening. AJ Puck was one of those guys where you weren't sure what was going to happen, just like kind of like you weren't sure how his season's going to progress this year. Goes from starter, moves to the bullpen, becomes a pretty dominant reliever, if you will, in the back of the bullpen when they used him. He's had a really good job of not allowing runs ever since becoming a reliever for Miami, and he gets moved, and he gets moved for a pretty decent deal, I should say. Something that Peter Bendix, we criticized with the Luis Arraez trade. You look at the return with this one, it's actually quite good for what Miami's getting back.
Yeah, so to kind of take some of those points, first, Puck as a starter versus reliever. They moved him back to starter to open this season. Made four starts, 0-4, 9.22 ERA. It was 13 and two-thirds innings across four starts. So we didn't even average four innings a start. 14 earned runs, 17 walks to 12 strikeouts in those 13 and two-thirds innings. As a reliever, he's thrown 30 innings. He's 4-4 with a 2.08 ERA. He's walked six batters in 30 and a third innings. He struck out 33. He has been much better in literally every single respect as a reliever than as a starter. So despite his overall stats not being great, he's rocking a 4.30 ERA and a 4-8 record. That is misleading because he was so bad as a starter. But again, as a reliever, he, you know, 2.08 ERA. He's on a streak of not allowing runs, really good. Now the return, infielder Devinson De Los Santos, center fielder Andrew Pintar. And the thing here is, you mentioned we criticized Peter Bendix on InsideTheMarlins.com after he made the Luis Arraez trade. And the big pieces of that trade, outfielder Dylan Head out for the year after, I believe it's hip surgery, and then center fielder Jacob Marcy and first baseman Nathan Martorella. The issues there were those guys were at best average defensively, didn't have a lot of power, and they were guys that raised the floor, not the ceiling, right? Yeah. They could, the goal is for those guys to make the majors and give you competence, right? So that was the criticism that we had about that trade. When you look at this one, Devinson De Los Santos was in the futures game this year. Now, not nearly a guarantee to make the majors and to stick as a productive major leaguer. He was not protected by Arizona in the Rule 5 draft. Cleveland took him. They gave him back. But it's something where between AA Amarillo, AAA Reno, he's batting 325, 376 with a 635 slugging and has hit 28 home runs, 14 at each level. Now, the flip side of this, and the caveat you have to give to that, is both of those parks are great hitters' parks. Reno's 4,500 feet above sea level, right? So balls don't move the same. And De Los Santos is high ceiling, low floor. Defensively, he's already at first base, so he's got to hit. But you look at, like, he swings and he chases 47% of the time. He whiffs on breaking balls like 36% of the time. Now, in the zone, he's pretty decent at making contact in the zone, but he also chases way too much. So, high risk, high reward. He could hit 35 home runs in the majors at first base, and Josh Bell is going to be on his way out soon. And then Pintar is a good center fielder. He was he hit in high A, but he was also 23 years old in high A. Little old there. And then when he says he's gotten to double A, he's really struggled against breaking pitches. So something where he's going to be able to run a decent average, provided he can start hitting off speed and breaking stuff. Don't think he's going to have a ton of power, but I do think he's going to have decent defense. They took him in the fifth round in 2022 out of, I think it's Brigham Young, and they put him in center field and he's been okay, but I don't think his arm's that great. So a little bit more risk in this trade, but feels like a much better return than what you got for Luis Arraez.
Yeah, if they put Pintar in AA Pensacola, it's going to be really interesting how they're going to work that outfield, because that outfield's actually kind of loaded right now with the assets they brought in from the Arraez trade. But Los Santos is super interesting. And I agree with what you said about how the power, it's there. It could be a 30, 35 home run guy, but there's also some issues with his swing and miss. What's interesting to me and what popped out right away when I looked at his page, he's 21 years old doing this in AAA. And that's the most exciting part, that you're getting these power numbers. And yes, it's on the PCL. I want to see what he can do in the International League, because that is a different kind of stance and ballpark. So when he goes to Jacksonville, and I'm sure that's where he's going to be assigned, is AAA Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. It's going to be must-see TV for a little bit if you're a Marlins fan, to understand what you're going to get out of him. I hope they don't rush him because he's 21 years old. I hope we don't see him at all in the major leagues this year because there's no reason to. Right. Keep him in Jacksonville, invite him to spring training next year, and then start off strong with him maybe as your starting first baseman with the Marlins next year. But I like this return for Miami. I think it only just starts what is going to be the inevitable fire sale that we're going to be seeing with Miami. Tanner Scott's going to go. There's talks. The Athletic dropped a report saying that some of the other relievers that have control out to 2028, 2029 could be on the move. And of course, the inevitable Jazz Chisholm might be moved as well. So it's not done with Miami. I think they're just getting started. And I think this move for Arizona also shows that they're just getting started as well. I think Arizona's going to go for it. And this move, getting ahead of all the rest of the contenders for the first reliever off the market, just shows that the Diamondbacks are ready to be aggressive at this trade deadline.
Yeah, talking about being aggressive at the trade deadline, getting out in front of stuff. Randy Arozarena goes from the Rays to the Mariners. Yeah,
good morning.
Good morning on that, yeah. Three-player package, we know two of them right now. You have outfielder Aiden Smith, right-hand pitcher Brody Hopkins, and a player to be named later. So, first, the Mariners side of this. I like the idea of pairing Randy Arozarena and Julio Rodriguez together in 2025, right? I think that left field, center field, it's two great personalities, two great players that when they are on can carry a team. I don't know how much this does for the 2024 roster. The Mariners have been the worst team in baseball at striking out. Like, they strike out a ton, and this is after they traded a ton of or got rid of a bunch of guys who struck out a lot, like Eugenio Suarez going to Arizona last year. They're last in batting average at .216, and the third worst OPS in baseball behind only the Marlins and the White Sox, right? Randy Arozarena is batting worse than their batting average. He's batting .211. Their average is .216. His OPS is higher than .660. I'll give them that. Career .787, but he's coming in on 2020 season. He started slow early. He's picked up since then. With Julio Rodriguez being out, with JP Crawford being out, I don't know how much Randy Arozarena does for you this season. They've absolutely collapsed recently. They've blown a 10-run lead in the West. I think it's at best a coin flip whether or not they make the postseason. But I do like the ability to do this for the future. Question's going to be, this return, was this return worth it, or is this going to hurt you later?
Yeah, is this 2018 all over again for the Mariners, where you start off strong right before the All-Star break and then wind up being 8 games out of the playoffs? That's something that you don't want to see. Randy Arozarena, we know he's got good playoff experience. We saw it happen in, what was 2019, 2020? I can't remember what year it was. But
2020, I think, yeah.
2020, he had some great things. We saw some good things. That's something that Seattle doesn't have. And you mentioned, yes, their batting is not good. Randy's not having the great year that he has had in the past. But this Mariners pitching rotation is so good. Why waste the core, the young core, the young years? I'm glad that DePoto, and we know that he was going to make some kind of move. He's one of the most aggressive president of baseball operations, GM, whatever one you want to call him, in baseball. And adding a guy like Arozarena, when you see the return, some people think that the Mariners, let's go with what the youngsters say, fleeced the Tampa Bay Rays. But when you look at these players, and I know you're going to have some good views on them, I think this is a great return for Tampa. And anytime Tampa goes and gets some prospects that you're not sure about, just know that they are well aware of what they're getting back in return.
Yes,
I love Brody Hopkins, by the way.
Brody Hopkins to me, okay, what's deal with that real quick. Fifth round pick, and the thing with Brody Hopkins, he's one of those guys that was a two-way player before you drafted him. He's now exclusively pitching. And so to me, that's a scenario where, like, yes, he was in single A, but those are the guys that can take those exponential jumps once they actually just pitch. Now, it's going to be a while before he hits the majors, obviously. Yeah. I mean, he was in single A. And for me, what this does for Tampa, I think, is this gives them the ability to give some other guys some runway. But we trust this organization with a guy like Brody Hopkins. We trust them to develop pitching. Look at the guys that they've brought through, whether it's Shane McClanahan, Shane Boz, who was a player to be named later. I think it's important to point out. I think it was the Chris Archer deal. They've been able to find good pieces. And I like the addition of Brody Hopkins. I think that's good. It was College of Charleston, I think, is where he was. And then Aiden Smith. Aiden Smith's a guy I drafted in fantasy in a first-year player draft. He came out of high school in Texas, was absolutely, I'm trying to get the stats right here, when he was in Modesto, so he was with the Nuts. 284, 402, 470, 9 home runs, 28 stolen bases. From what I saw of him, both before the draft and then after he got drafted, the defense is good. He's got plenty of speed, and I feel like he's going to be able to grow into at least average, if not above average, power.
Yeah,
Yeah, and then this is a situation where the Rays can now give some of their other outfielders some run, right? And then just in a couple of years, you'll have the opportunity to plug him into the lineup if you want to. So I like this deal. I think that it can work out well for both teams if Arozarena can be the guy who we thought he was. Again, that's probably going to be 2025 before he can impact the win-loss total of the Mariners. But I think both teams could win here because Seattle does have a strong farm system. They had a great draft last year. A lot of those guys have been amazing. As long as the player to be named later is not Colt Emerson, right. I think the Mariners can say this was also a win despite what they gave up.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think that, as you mentioned, with Seattle saying they have a strong farm system, I've had the chance to see them, most of those guys play, and I've gone to a couple Everett games this year. But that, I don't think they're done either. I know we talk about Arizona. I don't think Seattle's done either. I think that you could even go still chase after Jazz Chisholm Jr., someone extra in the outfield, or go for some more bullpen help.
Can you imagine the vibes of an outfield that's Julio Rodriguez, Randy Arozarena, and Jazz Chisholm?
They're all on?
Yeah. The swag of that outfield, that would be just the best freaking outfield in baseball from a pure vibes perspective.
Yeah, you'd have to give Randy Arozarena a cover for MLB The Show because I think he'd be the only one missing for it, right?
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay, so having talked about some of the youngsters here, a veteran, Clayton Kershaw, returned to baseball, made his season debut, goes 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts, throws 72 pitches, so... if his pitch count had been built up, he would have been able to go back out for the fifth. So he's not quite stretched out, but it feels like he's closer to getting there. And a couple things, just great. One, it's Clayton Kershaw. He throws curveballs, and they're great. It's that lefty curveball. My apologies to Max Fried. That lefty curveball is still the platonic ideal of a lefty curveball, right?
Absolutely.
Here's the surprising thing, though. 72 pitches, he only threw 10 curveballs yesterday. Right, he threw 32 sliders, got 8 whiffs on it, threw 24 fastballs, averaged like 91 on the fastballs. I don't think he went over 92, but averaged around 91. The 10 curveballs and 6 changeups. And we've seen, for as great as Clayton Kershaw has been in his career, and he's been amazing, in recent years, he has struggled in the postseason. And I think last year, I didn't get out of the first inning, just gets blasted. If this is the Clayton Kershaw arsenal, slider, 91 mile an hour fastball, curveball, can he be effective in the postseason for the Dodgers?
I think when you look at this and then you look at now where his innings pitched is his workload for the season is only going to probably enter the postseason with, if you're lucky, what, 40, 45 innings pitched. I think this could absolutely be a great arsenal for Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers heading into the postseason. Yes, he's had a lot of issues in the postseason. Lots of issues. I mean, one of the biggest iconic photos with Clayton Kershaw, unfortunately, isn't one of his feats. It's him sitting on the bench looking upset because he just got blown out by the Washington Nationals on their way to going to the World Series. I mean, I can see that. It's like burnt into my eyeballs, that picture. But having him back is just great for baseball. When you see a legend back, whether you like the Dodgers or not, I don't personally, I'm not a big Dodgers fan at all, but I put it in the chat. So how can you not love Clayton Kershaw's and what Pitching Ninja calls the Cooperstown curveball? It's just perfect. It looks like time slows down when you see that curveball on TV. And it's the same when you see it live too. I've seen it a couple times at Dodger Stadium. I think Kershaw can be a really big asset to the Dodgers. Now, here's the other thing. With the rest of the pitchers that they have, Lindsay, he doesn't necessarily have to be a game one, two, or three starter in the Dodgers rotation if you're going into the playoffs. He could come out of the bullpen. He could be one of those guys that come in and just be a one or two inning guy with this point of his career. I don't know if he would personally take that job. I think he would because of where he's at and taking the friendly deals with Los Angeles, but he doesn't necessarily have to be one of those starting pitchers for Los Angeles. They're in a good spot, and you know they're going to also continue and probably add somebody before the deadline as well.
Yeah, I mean, assuming everybody's healthy, which obviously is a tall task. They have a ton of guys who are on the IL right now.
That's true.
But you could see Glasnow starting game one. You could see something where, you know, maybe it's, if Buehler comes back and looks good, maybe Gavin Stone, maybe Yamamoto, if he is healthy enough to do a postseason start. And I could see Kershaw being hey, just get us through the lineup once. Ideally, you're throwing three innings because you're hitting all nine guys, but get us through the lineup once, and then we'll go to our bullpen. Like, I could totally see something like that happening.
You don't really notice it because he hasn't had some great seasons since, but in 2019, I keep going back to the Nationals, but in 2019, Patrick Corbin came out of the bullpen for the Nationals, and he was very good in the postseason out of the bullpen. I could see Kershaw filling that type of role for the Dodgers.
Yeah, just that veteran guile and that dude who knows how to turn over a lineup. Yeah, so small slate of games. Yesterday, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. Small slate of games, but two that were really interesting. Marlins-Orioles. Orioles dropped the first two games of the series in Miami. Get a scare here. They're up 6-1 in the ninth inning. Let the Marlins come back and tie it up. I believe that was off of Craig Kimbrel.
Yes.
And so they end up going to extras. They win an extra 7-6 to not get swept. But I think we've already talked about the Marlins some here. I think the big takeaway here for the Orioles is trade deadline coming up. They need pitching, and it feels like they're going to need both starting and relief pitching. The question is, how aggressive do we think they're going to be about getting pitching, and are they willing to give up on some of their best prospects to do that? Because it feels like they haven't really wanted to trade any of the big prospects, and they've been hoping to just trade some of the minor leaguers who are not extra, but who are ahead of some of those prospects.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest question that we've had for Mike Elias and the Baltimore Orioles since he's taken over, right? When he's going to finally decide to move on from some of these prospects? You can't put all of them on a 26-man roster, right? You can't do it. There's just not enough space. He moved a couple to St. Louis last year to bring Jack Flaherty over, but as you mentioned, they were
maybe he does that again.
Low level. Yeah, they just weren't those top guys. But with this season, where they're at, Craig Kimbrel blowing his sixth save of the season, Felix Bautista is being dreadfully missed by the Baltimore Orioles this year. Mm-hmm. Yes, Kimbrel is one of the legends in the game when it comes to being at the back end of a bullpen. But if you can move him to the eighth or seventh inning in just a high leverage situation and bring in another closer, maybe bring back Tanner Scott, which would be interesting, a former Oriole. Yeah. That would be perfect. But what are you going to need for Tanner Scott? He's a one-year rental. Are you going to need to probably give up your high-end pieces? Probably not. But if you're looking at the other side of this story, Lindsay, and I think this is where it's going to come into play about what kind of prospects are they going to move, the starting pitching. There's a lot of rumors circling around that they're in possibility of moving for Tarek Skubal. If they do that, there's going to be some high prospects moving to Detroit. Detroit is going to have suitcases just carrying from Baltimore to Detroit, and each of them are going to have a top 10 prospect from Baltimore, and then there's going to be top 100 prospects in there as well. So I think that they have to grab at least one starting pitcher and one person from the bullpen, preferably a back of the guy bullpen like a Tanner Scott. Skubal, I don't know if he's going to be moved. I don't know if this is just some lots of rumors happening, or if it's just something to let something else be moved or circulate. Right. But if they go and grab that, you have Corbin Burnes and Tarek Skubal as your 1-2 in the playoffs.
Grayson Rodriguez is your third. And that's Grayson, probably yeah. one of the best playoff rotations.
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
Quick note on the prospects. Jackson Holliday, not expected to be moved. They've indicated catcher first baseman Samuel Basayo. They don't want to move him either. So the big ones to watch here, corner infielder Kobe Mayo. He's been stuck in AAA Norfolk. Amazing power. Question here is, obviously, you've got so many first basemen at the major league level ahead of him. Ryan Mountcastle can play it. Anthony Santander can play it. And that's why he's been stuck in AAA. What they'd love to do is trade some of those major league guys ahead of him so that they can have a spot for him. But teams are going to be asking for Kobe Mayo as probably the headliner of some of these trades. So what do they do in that situation? Does he go, and is somebody able to pry Enrique Bradfield out of them as well? Those are kind of the big questions there.
The arm he has is incredible. He just had one of the brilliant game-winning saving catches just or throws just the other day in the minor leagues. It's all over social media if you're following any kind of Baltimore minor leagues. But I agree with you. Mayo is going to be the stud if you can move him, if you're not going to be able to move Holliday. But there are also some fringe guys right now that are on the major league roster that would be great for other teams as well.
Norby, Kirsten, Colton Cowser.
Yeah, Cowser. And Cowser had a lot of hype at the beginning of the season. I know he cooled off a bit, but if somebody thinks that they can get that back, that might be a great trade asset as well.
Yeah, and then the other interesting game also went to extras, Braves versus Mets. Mets walk it off in 10 innings, 3-2 over Atlanta. Frustrating end to the game for Atlanta. The 10th inning, Ramon Laureano's on third base, breaks for home on a bunt attempt. The bunt doesn't go down. He gets caught in a rundown, thrown out. And then the bottom half of the inning, runners on first and second for the Mets. He misplays a ball in the right field corner. Run scores. Mets walk it off. Brian Snitker after the game was really frustrated with Laureano's decision and with some of the things that he did in that 10th inning. More fiery than I've heard Brian Snitker be in a while. A manager who's known for being a player's manager, protecting his guys, taking the heat off of his guys. But a couple things just out of that, I think there's three big takeaways from this game. One, Francisco Lindor, 1-for-4 in this game with a homer off of Chris Sale. First homer off of Chris Sale in over a month. And his stats since moving to leadoff, 303, 386, 569. It's been 59 games, 15 home runs, 14 stolen bases. Is Francisco Lindor in the conversation for National League MVP? And if he's not, should he be?
Yeah, if he's not, he should be. He's the biggest snub for the All-Star game without question. The fact that he is now putting up these kind of numbers, if he's not in the conversation, he absolutely should be. Going back to that mention about Snitker and how he was talking about, how he was upset after the game, after the messed up play in the outfield. He was getting some criticism at the beginning of last week for not going out to the umpires of a couple really bad calls that could have changed the game that actually started this Braves 5-game losing streak. So maybe he's finally just turning the wheel and wants to change the way that he's thinking, or maybe there's just frustration has set in so much with this squad. I know they had a players meeting the other day. Maybe this frustration is sitting in so much because this team is just so good to be this bad that it's getting to Brian Snitker as well. But when you're talking about Lindor, absolutely he should be in the NL MVP race. Absolutely. 14 stolen bases since leading off. Wow, man. Incredible.
Yeah, pulling up some of the National League odds right now. He's actually, turns out, third. It's a two-man race. Shohei Ohtani's the favorite. Bryce Harper's second. And then you have a group behind that is Francisco Lindor, +2100, Freddie Freeman, Kettle Marte, and Ellie De La Cruz. And then behind that, then there's another jump in the odds where you get to the next group. So he's seen around the top of that second tier of guys, but it feels like it's between Ohtani and Bryce Harper right now. Yeah. So obviously defense does not matter at all.
Yeah, it'll be tough to chase Ohtani just because of what he's doing right now, especially what he's doing. If you look at what his WAR is right now, even without pitching, is pretty incredible. Yeah. But Lindor definitely deserves to be in the conversation. I think that, as we mentioned, he has been so overlooked. And if that's the case, maybe he won't win the MVP, but he's definitely on pace to be the Silver Slugger.
Yeah. Talking about a guy who is not overlooked in the award odds, Chris Sale has a great start yesterday against the Mets. 7 3rd innings, 2 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk to 9 strikeouts. Only, I think, the second time he's gotten an out in the 8th inning in a couple, in a while because of all the injuries that he dealt with. 2019, yeah. There you go. But great trade by Atlanta. They give up Vaughn Grissom for the Boston Red Sox. And Boston's paying a majority of Sale's salary this year. So great move. And right now, leading the race ahead of Zach Wheeler and Paul Skeens for the National League Cy Young, that's the three guys in the top tier. And if you look at Sale right now, 13-3, 2.68 ERA. In his 19 starts, he's on 117 3rd innings, 149 strikeouts to 25 walks. The 13 wins leads Major League Baseball. The winning percentage of .813 also leads Major League Baseball. His FIP, fielding independent pitching, .228, leads baseball, and he leads the National League in WHIP with .920. I think the question here is, if the season ends today, is Chris Sale the Cy Young winner, and can he keep this up all year?
That's a great question. I think if the season ends today, yes, I'm handing it to Chris Sale. But if you look at where we're heading now, we're going into unknown territory for two of those top three pitchers in the Cy Young race. Chris Sale being one of them. He's already at 117 innings pitched. This is the most he's pitched in quite some time since all these injuries happening. You got to be really excited for him and what's happening, him resurrecting his career back in Atlanta. I'm sure Boston would love to have this kind of performance right now, because I mean, their pitching staff's been good, but adding him would be just outstanding. And then you have Paul Skeens, which has been fantastic. He was the starter for the National League All-Star game, but this is the first year of Paul Skeens. We don't know what's going to happen to him moving forward. He was pitching college baseball last year, Lindsay. This is brand new territory for him as well when it comes to innings pitched. And Wheeler has been just a complete mainstay for the Phillies.
Wheeler's been Wheeler, right?
He's
been Wheeler.
You have to just assume that he's going to continue to be on the pace that he's at if all three stay healthy. But with the unknown territory that we're at, even though that Sale, he had a great outing, even though he let up a home run to Lindor, seems like it's the kryptonite for him over the last couple of years. I have to think that he's going to continue this. There's no reason not to believe that he's going to just fall off a cliff, because he's been doing so well this season. And yeah, if I'm a betting man, which I'm not, because in the state of Washington, they don't let you unless you're at a casino, which is stupid. but if I'm a betting man, I'm taking Chris Sale as my National League Cy Young once the season's over.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. And for me, with Sale, I'm confident in saying that because he's done it, right? Outside of those years he was injured, and there was a lot of years and a lot of injury, but outside of those, this is right in line with everything that he did. I mean, this is a guy that had, I think, 6 consecutive Cy Young finishes, like in the voting, had a couple runner-ups, never won one. But if this was somebody else doing this, I would be hesitant to think they could keep it up all year because they hadn't done it before. He's done it, and it was always a matter of health. And we heard him from when he first got traded to Atlanta and hopped on a Zoom with the media, which I was on back in December. I talked to him at spring training in Northport. All of that time, he said, "This is the healthiest I've been in years. I feel great." And we're seeing what can happen when he is as healthy as he was in his prime. Real quick, before we get out of here, like you mentioned earlier, Braves have lost 5 straight. Do we think that their plan for the season, for the trade deadline, do we think it's going to change? Do we think that something's going to be different now than it would have been maybe a month ago when they had a 8-game lead in the wild card race and things like that? I think that they're going to make ads, but I don't think it's going to be as all in as it was. because they've dealt with so many injuries, so much uncertainty, and so much underperformance.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that that's what they should do. And I think that, you know, although we've seen the aggressiveness of Alex Anthopoulos, I think that he's going to make some very smart moves moving forward. I don't think he's going to put all his eggs in one basket for 2024 when you're missing guys like Acuna, Strider, you know, Freed for a certain amount of time. I think he's going to pick up some value pieces, and I would not be surprised if those pieces also have control for 2025 moving forward.
Especially pitching.
Exactly. Especially because in 2025, you do not know the status of the rotation. What's going to happen with Max Fried? What's going to move forward in 2025? I know there's been people mention certain, like Zach Eflin as a potential piece for the Braves, mm-hmm. has control in 2025. So I think that's where they're going to go. It might not be one of those trade deadlines that wow you or surprise you, but I think it's going to be something that's going to be very important, not for this season, not just for this season. I think it'll still help them get into the postseason wild card, but it's also going to help them move forward in 2025.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me. And just kind of for non-Braves fans on here, I know a lot of our audience is Braves fans, but Max Fried, free agent, Charlie Morton, free agent, and will turn 41 right after the season. He's a retirement risk. Strider is due back sometime around opening day, but you don't know exactly when and how good he will be. And then Ian Anderson is still in the minors after Tommy John, trying to come back from that. So you're looking at Sale. Like, you know, you'll have Sale, you'll have Lopez, again, barring injury. And then Spencer Schwellenbach, the prospect, has been fantastic this year after his first couple starts. Looks like he'll be your third guy. You just don't really know who your fourth and fifth spots will be. So it's interesting there. Great first show. We're going to be doing this ideally every single weekday. So subscribe to the channel if you're not already subscribed. Do us a favor, like this video. Christian, where can folks go to get more of your content, your writing, your baseball takes?
Yeah, so you can find all of my baseball takes on Twitter at Christian S. Rao. You can see it below on the screen. And then I write for Athlon Sports across many different websites. I am the manager editor of Inside the Cardinals. So you can find that at InsideTheCardinals.com.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. Again, also writing for a lot of the Athlon Sports sites, but my main focus is Atlanta Braves at bravestoday.com. We will see you next time on First Pitch.